He stopped the horse and looked down at us. He was refreshed, and I would have sworn the tiny wrinkles around his eyes were what with him would be a smile. His eyes were not restless when he looked at you like this. They were still and steady, and you knew the man's whole attention was concentrated on you, even in the casual glance. "Thank you," he said in his gentle voice, and was turning into the road back to us before Father spoke in his slow, deliberate way. "Don't be in such a hurry, stranger." I had to hold tight to the rail or I would have fallen backwards into the corral. At the first sound of Father's voice, the man and the horse, like a single being, had wheeled to face us, the man's eyes boring at Father, bright and deep in the shadow of the hat's brim. I was shivering, struck through once more. Something intangible and cold and terrifying was there in the air between us. I stared in wonder as Father and the stranger looked at each other a long moment, measuring each other in an unspoken fraternity of adult knowledge beyond my reach. Then the warm sunlight was flooding over us, for Father was smiling and he was speaking with a drawling emphasis that meant he had made up his mind. I said, "Don't be in such a hurry, stranger. Food will be on the table soon and you can bed down here tonight." The stranger nodded quietly as if he too had made up his mind. "That's mighty thoughtful of you," he said, and swung down and came toward us, leading his horse. Father slipped into step beside him, and we all headed for the barn. "My name's Starrett," said Father, "Joe Starrett. This here," waving at me, "is Robert McPherson Starrett. Too much name for a boy. I make it Bob." The stranger nodded again. "Call me Shane," he said. Then to me, "Bob it is. You were watching me for quite a spell coming up the road." It was not a question, it was a simple statement. "Yes," I stammered. "Yes, I was." "Right," he said, "I like that. A man who watches what's going on around him will make his mark." A man who watches. For all his dark appearance and lean, hard look, this Shane knew what would please a boy. The glow of it held me as he took care of his horse, and I fussed around, hanging up his saddle, forking over some hay, getting in his way and my own in my eagerness. He let me slip the bridle off, and the horse, bigger and more powerful than I had thought now that I was close beside it, put its head down patiently for me and stood quietly while I helped him curry away the caked dust. Only once did he stop me. That was when I reached for his saddle roll to put it to one side. In the instant my fingers touched it, he was taking it from me, and he put it on a shelf with a finality that indicated no interference. When the three of us went up to the house, Mother was waiting, and four places were set at the table. "I saw you through the window," she said, and came to shake our visitor's hand. She was a slender, lively woman with a fair complexion even our weather never seemed to affect, and a mass of light brown hair she wore piled high to bring her, she used to say, closer to Father's size. "Marion," Father said, "I'd like you to meet Mr. Shane." "Good evening, ma'am," said our visitor. He took her hand and bowed over it. Mother stepped back and, to my surprise, dropped in a dainty curtsy. I'd never seen her do that before. She was an unpredictable woman. Father and I would have painted the house three times over and in rainbow colors to please her.